Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life with your host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our guest tonight is Michael Tim, and we will be talking about great mediums in history. If you have a question or comment for our guest tonight, the number here is 888-627-6008. Tonight's show is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's KAMLAK.com. Bob?
And it's a pleasure to reintroduce Michael Tim. Some of our members are familiar with him. We have a link to Mike's blog on our consciousness blog page of our website. He's a journalist. He's contributed more than 1,600 articles to some 50 publications over the past 50 years. And his writing assignments have taken him to diverse places such as Bangkok and Panama and Jerusalem and down the West. He currently serves as editor of the Journal for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies and the Searchlight, both quarterly publications of the Academy for Spirituality and Consciousness Studies. His metaphysical and paranormal articles have appeared in many publications such as Atlantis Rising, Paranormal Review, Fate, Mysteries, Vital Signs, and the list goes on. He has authored, I believe it's still 7 books, maybe soon to be 8, but you may correct me on that, Mike. Some of the books, The Articulate Dead, Running on Third Wind, The Afterlife Revealed, Transcending the Titanic, The Afterlife Explorers, Resurrecting Leonora Piper, Dead Men Talking. And the last 5 were published by White Crow Books, who also houses his blog. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Bob and Fran. I appreciate the opportunity to come back on with you. I just want to make a correction on what you said. I'm no longer editor of the Searchlight and the Journal for the Academy. I turn that over to back to Jim Beachler, who's the president of the Academy, but I'm still contributing articles and book reviews to them, but everything else was correct, I think.
Okay. And I guess a good place to start, people may be curious, you know, why, you know, a journalist, and you had a prior career, you know, in corporate life, and why the interest in historical mediumship and spirituality? I mean, was it the result of any personal experience?
No, it just sort of evolved. I grew up a Catholic, and somewhere around during my early 30s, I decided the Catholic Church wasn't for me, and I tried a few Protestant churches, and they didn't work for me either. And so I just didn't have any belief at all for about 10 to 15 years, and I think after I turned 50, I decided I've got to get back into some kind of belief system, and started reading various books. I read Carlos Castaneda and other books relating to mysticism, and then I saw Dr. Raymond Moody's book in 1976, I think it was, and read that. It just sort of evolved. There was, as far as mediumship is concerned, I had an experience at the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain in 1999 that whet my appetite in that somewhat. I may have related this to you the last time we talked a few years ago. I don't know if we're going to go into detail, but anyway, a former friend came through at that sitting and gave me quite a bit of evidential information. And from that, I started reading more about mediumship, and that became my primary interest. Prior to that, it was near-death experiences and reincarnation, but that 1999 experience sort of turned me on to mediumship.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we talk about mediumship in particular, the subject of death comes up, obviously, because that's what mediums do. It seems that we live in a society that fears death and will, you know, go to great lengths to do everything in their power to, you know, extend their life and make themselves appear to be younger. You know, people take all sorts of they go for plastic surgery and enhancements and tonics and so forth. So what do you suppose contributes to our fear of death?
Well, I think there are several reasons. The first one is just the thought of extinction. And this, I guess, would apply mostly to atheists or nihilists, that it's lights out. And I think that fears with even with believers to some degree. And I've known quite a few atheists or nihilists over the years, and some of them are quite brave in their belief. I call it bravado. But, you know, I think they're really shaking in their boots the whole time. I had a friend who died about 3 months ago, and he was a good Catholic. And during the last 3 or 4 weeks of his life, he was really shaking in his boots. I'd call him up. He just couldn't talk. He'd start crying. And when he did get a word through here and there, it's just that he didn't know what was going to happen. It was the uncertainty of everything that it caused the fear. And I think that uncertainty is there for even for believers to some extent. It's a matter of degree. Religion hasn't done much to paint a positive picture of the afterlife. In fact, we were talking about this yesterday in an exchange on the Internet. I don't know what the stereotypical view of religion is by the churches these days. When I grew up, it was a horrific hell and a humdrum heaven. I mean, heaven was just, you know, floating around on clouds and strumming harps and so forth. I don't know what they believe these days, but it's not a very positive view, so, you know, it's that thought of extinction and the uncertainty of the unknown that are the primary reasons for it, I believe. But there's also the pain, discomfort, and anxiety that go with the dying process itself.
Yeah.
I experience that all the time. I mean, I'm 83 years old now, and I've got some heart problems, AFib, atrial fibrillation of the heart, and there are times when it's acting up. And I'll go to bed wondering if I'm going to wake up the next day. And it's, you know, I have a conviction that if I do die during the night, I'll wake up in a larger life. But there's still maybe a 1 or 2% doubt there that maybe it is extinction. I call myself a 98.8% believer in survival. But
yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that, you know, because it's a good question whether or not those that profess to know, you know, absolutely that there is life after physical death, whether or not there is any percentage of doubt that lingers. You mentioned religion. I think that the majority of people who claim to be religious, you know, when they tell you that they believe in an afterlife, they're really saying that they hope because they haven't seen any tangible evidence, and I guess that's the value of the work that you do and others in presenting the evidence. So, you know, they could build on that hope into something more concrete. And you agree?
I'd like to think so. Many of my religious friends don't seem to see it that way. They say faith is enough, and the Bible is enough, and Maybe it is. I hesitate to put myself in their shoes and know exactly what they're thinking. And I have one person I'm thinking of right now that is confident, you know, that in his views as a Christian. He's a born-again Christian, and he thinks all my views are demonic.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's an issue that we all deal with. But, it's interesting, you know, I wonder if those who do not believe in an afterlife live their lives differently than those that do believe, you know, because I guess those who do believe in an afterlife believe not necessarily from a religious point of view, but they believe that, you know, the life that they live in the physical world somehow affects their life in the realm after death. So therefore, they act differently than those who, if you believe that the end is really the end and it's final, I mean, it doesn't really matter what you do in the physical world, does it?
Well, I think it's a matter of degree. I mean, there are a lot of people who, out of fear that there is an afterlife or there is a hell, that they avoid doing certain things that they might otherwise do. But the humanist would say that you can be a moral person, you know, whether or not there is an afterlife. So
right.
It's a matter of what the individual or how the individual reacts to it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with journalist Michael and author Michael Timm. You can find his many of his books and a link to his blog on the Fervor Family Foundation website under Consciousness Blog. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to go to a short break. And we come back, we'll have more with Michael Timm, so stay with us.
www.kam, that's K-A-M. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perissetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Michael Timm, and we are talking about the great mediums in history. If you have a question or comment for our guest, the number here is 888-627-6008. This show is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. Bob?
Now we're back with Michael Timm. Mike, there certainly were a lot of great mediums 150 years ago during the spiritualism era. And of course, as is today, I mean, many of the mediums were found to be fraudulent. And I'm not certain that the degree of fraud is any less today than it was 100 or 150 years ago. In fact, it could be even more. I mean, you have any thoughts about that?
I think, first of all, you have to distinguish between the type of mediumship we see today, the clairvoyant type, and the that of 100 or 150 years ago, which was more of the physical mediumship, trans voice, direct voice, that type of thing. It is totally different from the clairvoyance we hear about or see today. And I think there were quite a few charlatans back in those days that were exposed, but there were also a number of very good mediums. The problem is that when the debunkers got involved, they, you know, even the genuine mediums were supposedly debunked because they might have had an off night or something didn't come through exactly as the debunker thought it should come through or whatever. So I think there were a lot of good mediums that were written off as fraudulent back in those days.
Yeah, and some of the mediums that you write about, I mean, were put under tremendous scrutiny by, you know, well-established scientists and researchers of the day, and, you know, some of them were even tied to their chairs and gagged and so forth. You wonder how a medium can do what they do, for lack of a better term, under those conditions. Do you think that scrutiny affected the process at all?
I think it did with quite a few of them. One thing that you come across in all the history books on mediums is that harmony was an important factor. Not only harmony, but patience. There were times when the researcher would sit there for 30 minutes, an hour, even 4 hours. In one case, I'm trying to think of Hamlin Garland. Okay, he was researching a medium in California, and he sat for 4 hours before anything happened. This was on New Year's Eve. He sat from 8 to 8:30 to 12:30. Nothing happened, and there were three or four other people present, and they said, you know, what are we waiting around for? Let's go celebrate. But Garland said, no, he's had this happen before, that you just have to have patience. And after about 4 hours, things started happening. And then the name of the medium was, last name was Currier, C-U-R-R-Y-E-R. I can't think of her first name. But he arranged to take her back to Boston to have some psychical researchers there study her. And when he got back there, this was like 6 months later, nothing happened. They sat there for an hour or so, and they finally gave up on her. And Garland said, let's try again a couple of days. So a couple of days later, nothing happened. So they finally wrote her off as a fraud. But then Garland asked one of the researchers there to have to arrange for a private sitting at his house. They did it. They sat there for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, I forget the exact time. And then all of a sudden, books started flying through the air. Spirits started talking, and it was just awesome. And it was just a matter of patience and harmony, and that just seems to come through. And with all the mediums, they just don't want to be put under pressure. There were some who were able to produce within a matter of a minute or two. They could achieve the passive state, whatever was necessary. But some of them took up to 4 hours.
Yeah,
I think we see that in everything else we do in sports. I've heard a number of baseball players say it's not, if they try to hit home runs, they fail. If they just stand there and make contact with the ball, they'll hit the ball out of the park. And once you get a medium, put her or him under pressure, tie him up, gag him, whatever they're doing to the person, and saying, okay, show us, that puts the pressure on the person, and they try, and once they start trying, it doesn't happen. But if they relax and achieve that passive state, then things start happening.
Yeah. I know one of the complaints that a lot of the researchers have back in the day, and even we hear it today from, in the modern day mediums, people wonder why the information that's brought through seems to be very trivial in nature. They're looking for, descriptions of what the afterlife environment is like, and, instead they're getting things about, Uncle George's watch or things of that nature. So on the one hand, I can understand it. I mean, if the purpose of the person in spirit is to let the person in the physical world know that they still exist, you would want to give evidence, so that may seem trivial, but not really. But what about the notion that those in the afterlife should be communicating more, deep concepts to us?
Well, initially, when this whole mediumship thing erupted back in 1850 or 1848 to 1850, that's what was coming through. A lot of higher truths, if you want to call them that, wisdom. Judge John Edmonds was probably the first really dedicated psychical researcher. He was a New York, as you probably know, a New York judge, Supreme Court justice, had been a senator and in the House of Representatives for New York from around that period, the late 1840s. He spent 2 years investigating mediums, and the result was, along with he collaborated with a physician, Dr. George Dexter, and they turned out some 800 pages, a book called Spiritualism, that was higher truths. They supposedly got information from Emanuel Swedenborg and Francis Bacon, with all kinds of it, and more information in there than you can find in the Bible. And then the same thing with Professor Robert Hare. He was a professor of chemistry at the University of Pennsylvania. He was a skeptic, but then he sat with about 24 mediums, I think it was, and became a believer. And he got a lot of non-trivial information from the people communicating with him. And then William Staten Moses, Church of England minister, gave us all kinds of higher truths, as did Alan Kardec of France. And prior to the Society for Psychical Research being organized in 1882, I'd say 90% of what was printed were higher truths. It wasn't until the Society for Psychical Research started looking for evidence that the trivial stuff started really being documented. I'm sure there was a lot of trivial information coming through prior to 1882, but I think as far as it being documented, I think that's when it changed to the trivial.
Yeah. One of the most fascinating accounts, which you wrote a book about, was, you know, about the William T. Stead who was a Titanic victim. Can you just give us a brief overview of Stead and what the circumstances were?
Yes. Well, I'm not sure. You know, I've heard his name pronounced Stead and Stead. I'm not sure which is the correct. I tend to pronounce it Stead, but
okay.
Anyway, he was journalist and editor in England, and somewhere around 1882, he had an employee who he observed doing automatic writing. So he became interested in the subject, and he studied it and became an automatic writer himself, and started receiving messages from an old acquaintance. And then he formed an organization in London. I forget the name of it right off the top of my head, but anyway, it was a bureau for mediums and for people who are grieving the death of loved ones to come to their place there and sit with mediums. But anyway, Stead was a passenger on the Titanic when it went down, and he didn't survive that, but his organization still continued for another 10 or 15 years, as I understand it.
And I know that, you know, in some of the descriptions that came through, you know, he referred to going through what we call today, a life review. And what's interesting is that he was describing the environment as well. You know, he said everything seemed to have a blue tinge to it, as if it were a blue island. And I think that there was a book that was written.
Called The Blue Island. Island.
Yeah.
So it was just reproduced by White Crow Books. It was actually his daughter, I can't think, Estelle, I think it was her name. She produced it, and it came primarily through automatic writing through a friend of hers. And had mostly to do with the initial stages after death. But Stead indicated, you know, stated that his experiences were not necessarily the experiences of other people. He had a very pleasant afterlife initial experience, you might say. But one thing I do recall is that when they were, you know, as the ship went down, they all gathered together in a group, and some of them were still concerned about their valuables and not really realizing that they were, quote, dead. And apparently it took some time for a number of them to awaken to the fact that they had died.
Yeah, I think he addresses, you know, the question of whether or not the, you know, once we cross over, we're all knowing, you know, because I had printed out some of the things that he had communicated, you know, through, you know, his daughter. And he said, you know, the mysteries of life are not revealed to you as a kind of welcoming gift on your arrival here. Yeah. He said, you know, that understanding, you know, comes slowly, and it's difficult to communicate because the conditions are so different than those experienced in the material life. You know, he went on to say, I'm only a little way on my journey, but just far enough to grasp the intense beauty of life and in life. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that comes through in just about, you know, there's so many books from that era that say the same thing, that, you know, we cross over as we are with the same, you know, no more knowledge than we had when we left.
Yeah. What's your feeling about spheres of different realms, you know, like different afterlife realms? Do you think it's a continuum of progression, you know, like we live a physical life. So maybe you live a life in one realm and then you get birthed into another realm and another realm, or
My understanding, and they frequently talk about seven planes or seven realms, spheres, or whatever you want to call them, and that most people seem to end up on in the third realm, which has been, by the spiritualists, call it Summerland, which is somewhat similar to the conditions we're living in now. But others, the first realm is supposedly what religions call hell, and it's more of a nightmare condition, I guess. People not actually realizing that they're dead and just living in a constant nightmare. Well, and the second sphere has been called Shadowland, where they're half awake and, you know, half realizing they're dead, and the other half is they're still living in the nightmare. You know, and people wonder how can you not know you're dead? And my answer to that is that when you're dreaming at night, how do you know that you're alive? And you know, it's the same thing with when you're watching a movie, you get absorbed in the movie, and you're actually, you know, you don't really stop and think, this is not real, this is not, you know, this is just a movie. You're actually, you know, taking part in the movie. And I think that's what death is like, somewhat, to being absorbed in a good movie, at least as far as the lower levels are concerned. Once you get to the, you graduate to the fourth sphere or plane, then it seems to get beyond, you know, human vocabulary. And as you go up to the fifth, sixth, and seventh, even more so, beyond human language. So most of the reports we've got through mediums are people on the third realm.
Yeah. I often wonder, those of us and who have a pretty good grasp or a deep belief or knowledge that physical life is not the end, I wonder if we have less bewilderment or an easier adjustment, you know, when we cross over and we say, hey, we still exist, you know. Whereas I guess if you lived the life, a materialistic life that discounted any possibility of life after physical death, that you might be more disoriented, you know, than those who had a sort of paved the way. What do you think?
That's my understanding. That's come through in a number of reports. How you balance what you believe as to how you lived your life is another question. I mean, if you believed all this, but you didn't lead a good moral life, you know, I don't know how that factors into it. But generally, what you just said is my understanding.
Okay. And we are talking with author Michael Timm. As I mentioned, Michael is the author of quite a number of books about the afterlife, so you can check him out, you know, on his blog, which you can reach, White Crow Books, or there's a link on the Forever Family Foundation website to it. So we have more to talk about with Mike. We're going to go to our second break, and stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlak.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those who are just tuning on in, our guest tonight is Michael Timm, and we are talking about the great mediums in history. This show is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. As always, we want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. And coming up for free this May 9th, we have our Visionary Explorers Group, which is an online meeting. They meet from, if you want to figure it out, 2 to 3 p.m. on the East Coast, 11 to noon on the Pacific, and you can calculate anything in between and on either side. But you must sign up for the group in order to attend. All the other afterlife discussion groups that have been meeting in the physical have now been moved to online meetings until further notice. And the details for the individual groups can be found on the events page on the website. So please note that some groups have opted to wait until in-person meetings can resume again, and those pages on the website will have that information noted. Our next webinar is Mediums on the Spot, presented by Professor Paranormal Lloyd Auerbach with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero and Joanne Gerber. This special live webinar is set for Wednesday, May 27th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Our annual Summer Grief Transformation Retreat has been filling up, so if you are thinking of attending this very special weekend, it will be July 10th through 12th in Chester, Connecticut, with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Kim Russo, Joe Scheel, our spirit artist, and Joe Peretta, along with our featured facilitator, Dr. Mo Hanna. Waste no time. Sign up now to learn that the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway into another chapter of continuing life. And please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Michael Tim. You know, Michael, you've obviously written extensively about some of the great mediums in history, and a lot of them worked in a very different fashion, you know, than today. Have you, it's a difficult question because there were so many, but have you formulated any opinion on who might be among the very best of the mediums in history?
Well, my choice is Etta Reit, or Wright. I'm not sure how she pronounced her name. W-R-I-E-D-T. Etta Wright, who lived in Detroit, Michigan. She was a direct voice medium around the early 1900s, and her experiences have been documented in a number of books, but especially by Vice Admiral Yus von Moor. He wrote a couple of books in 1911 and 1913, I think it was. And there were like 14 different languages that came through her. This is direct voice type medium as opposed to trans voice. A lot of people don't really know the difference between trans voice and direct voice. And trans voice, which is the type that Leonora Piper displayed initially in her mediumship, the voices actually come out of her mouth. In the direct voice, or the independent voice, they come from somewhere above them or through a trumpet to be amplified. And while these voices are coming through, the medium might be talking to the person next to him or her, which was observed quite a few times with Etta. She'd be talking to people, and voices would be coming through the trumpet in different languages, talking to people around her, and there was quite a bit of evidential information coming through, as well as I said, 14 different languages, I think it was. So she's my candidate for number one. Leonora Piper, I'd say number two, and Gladys Osborne Leonard of England, number three.
Well, it's certainly an impressive list. And you've written about them extensively, so listeners can look into those and read about the type of work that they did and how amazing some of the stuff sounds today. If I'd like to squeeze in a call, if we may. We have Patty from New York. Hello, Patty. Hello? Okay, I guess Patty's not with us. Okay, Mike, the question is...
Are you with us? Patty?
Hello?
There we go.
Okay. Oh, here we go.
Hi, Patty.
Yeah, hi. Patty. You're on. And did you have a question for Michael Tim?
Yes. Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, we're talking about the different realms. When a person passes... You said it may be scary because the first realm is basically what they're calling hell, that it's a little, scary. Is that a normal experience, or does a loved one come to help them go through that first realm?
No, it's my understanding that, you know, there's sort of an adaptation stage before you settle in at a particular level, and it's not that scary for the person who, you know, has led a good life or a good moral life.
Right.
I like the term that Professor Robert Hare gave it, moral specific gravity, that you sort of gravitate to a place that, to a level that you earned during your lifetime. But you don't go down to that first sphere or plane, whatever it's called, automatically. I mean, only the person who's, quote, earthbound will end up there, you know, after that initial adaptation stage.
So the earthbound spirits would be the ones that sometimes do, you know, hauntings and stuff like that and stay in I guess, you know, physical places, right?
Yeah, my understanding, you know, most of the earthbound spirits don't even know they're dead, you know, or maybe they're half conscious, and at times they realize they're dead, and at other times they don't. But those are the people with the low moral specific gravity.
Yeah.
Right.
And if I implied that everyone goes to that first, you know, to that first level, then I apologize for that.
No, that's okay. You know, I always thought when a person passes that within the first couple of hours that the spirit, like, stays around. Do you think that's true?
Well, there's, you know, I guess it depends upon the individual. It's my understanding that, you know, even while you're, quote, alive, you're still on the other side to some extent. And you know, I have, I know somebody that is over 100 years old now that seems to be here half the time, and half of the time is on the other side, not even aware of what's going on. And she'll all of a sudden switch and be fully aware that of what's going on around her, and at other times she doesn't know what's going on. So I think it's a gradual thing, and that we gradually move into that realm.
Right, but do you think the spirit's aware? Like I always used to hear that, especially years ago, when someone passed, someone needed to sit with the body for and stay with the body in case the spirit was still lingering. And, you know, I just wondered, because my father-in-law just passed, and he was at home when he passed, and we knew he was dying. And, my husband went to go and sit with him, you know, after he passed. And I thought that was a good thing. And, you know, I just don't, you know, a lot of times they say the spirit lingers for a while before it actually goes to wherever it's going.
That's my understanding, but I think it depends upon, what the person's moral-specific gravity was at the time he or she is passing over. If the person is, you know, totally materialistic, there's probably going to be more of a lingering period there than with a person who is more spiritualistic than materialistic.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's my understanding, anyway.
If I could add, I think what's significant is so many people, if you read all the accounts from people that had near-death experiences and some of the channel reports, that, you know, that we do undergo a life review, you know. So there's a certain degree of self-judgment. I'm not talking about any deity, you know, but we are shown in sort of like a quick motion picture, you know, all of the things that we've done, and we're able to feel the joy that we caused to others, and conversely, you know, we feel the anguish and the hurt that we may have caused to others. So maybe where we settle in the afterlife realm initially is our own choice. You know, it's based upon our own, you know, life review. But on the positive side, everything that I've read indicates that, you know, no matter where you initially are, there's a continuum of growth. You know, it may take some people longer than others, but everybody, you know, will advance in the afterlife realm.
Yeah, right? I'd like to throw in a little bit too, because I enjoy that Patty brought up the importance of sitting with the body. I think that that there's a lot of different cultures and religions out there that believe that the body needs to be with or watched by someone up until the actual burial time. So that's interesting that you bring that up. But I think what Bob is saying is true. It's very individualized, and Michael, too, is trying to point that out, that each individual, depending on their belief system while they're here in the physical, that's what they take with them initially when they cross over. And that may very well dictate the so-called seven realms or no realms, or, you know, even that, there's a lot of controversy over that kind of knowledge. But I always go back to the, if you want to read a great book, I always go back to the same book, Testimony of Light, which was a channeled book back in the 60s when you really had to have a publishing company to publish your books, as opposed to, you know, vanity presses now. So there were two friends. One was a nun, a Catholic nun, and the other one was a medium. And they made a pact that if one were to predecease the other, they would come back and tell them what the afterlife was like. And that's what the book is about. And it really speaks to what Michael is saying about how you are greeted on the other side, how you, when you first cross over, what your vision or expectations might be that will dictate your first experience, and how you're greeted by other people who will assist with the crossing over and the reorientation of the deceased person when they get to the other side.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks for calling, Patty.
And thank you. Thank you for answering my question.
Sure. Helen Greaves was the author that Fran was referring to.
Right.
I think it's Greaves.
Right.
I forget the name of the nun, but Helen Greaves is the author.
Frances
Banks.
Banks.
Banks. I got Frances.
All right. Well, that's where I was going.
Yeah. All right. So I understand that Michael's new book is going to be coming out soon, Musings on Life After Death. So we look forward to that. Also, let me repeat some of the books that Michael has written, because they're all kind of classics. The Articulate Dead, The Afterlife Revealed, Transcending the Titanic, The Afterlife Explorers, Resurrecting Leonora Piper, who Michael mentioned is one of the great mediums of all time, and Dead Men Talking. So they're a great read. You learn a lot about historical mediumship and related subjects. So I would recommend that you pick those up. Michael, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate speaking with you again. I always have a lot of great information.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Talk to you again soon. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Bye now.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.